Well, good morning and welcome to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
And I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
For her second show in a row, we have the lovely event coordinator, but she's so much more than that at the Financial Enhancement Group. She's really our first point of contact. So if you hear something on the show that you want to know more about, or set a time to come in and see somebody on the advisory team, Angie is in charge.
Yay, I'll be glad to talk to you. Just give me a call.
and the number would be?
1-800-928-4001.
So here's one of the reasons why I do the show. And it's one of the reasons why I've never written a book, even though my book is finally getting ready to come out, Ken.
Excellent.
And the reason for that is in the 14 semesters that I taught at Purdue University as an adjunct professor teaching financial planning, there was not one semester where I did not have to correct myself, right? And it wasn't because I was wrong, because tax code changes or investment rules change, products change, something changes that I had to be able to tell people. So one of the big issues that you hear us discuss a lot are required minimum distributions. And right now you need to be aware if you're over 70 and a half or getting near that, because we use those strategies for people when they're about 68, we start preparing for 2 years when they're going to be forced to take income. And there is a bipartisan, I didn't even know that existed in Washington anymore. there is a bipartisan bill that may extend that until age 72. Now, what that does for qualified charitable distributions and everything else, we don't know. Law hadn't passed. Don't put it in your book and just assume that it's going to be there. But it is one of those things that you need to be aware of. Things do change. So with my book, what will happen at the end of each chapter, there will be a QR reader, or for the Kindle version, a hot link. And so as you read it, you have the ability to click on the link, and that will take you to a video where I have updated it. If you register your resource, we will automatically email you when there's a change that's inside of the book. That way nothing is outdated, because it just drives me crazy when I read stuff where it was right when it was written, you know. And try getting a newspaper column off of the internet that I wrote 20 years ago, right? I mean, it doesn't, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there that I wrote that's simply just not right, but it was written 10 years ago.
And unfortunately, if you Google it, it may be the first thing that comes up.
The thing you have to remember about Google is that it is data sensitive, not date sensitive.
So never believe everything you read on the internet, huh,
Joe? For lots and lots of reasons, right? But always check the source. You know, I'm always, people will email me and say, hey, is this still accurate? Or just to get a clarification, especially if they're in the media. And I'm always more than happy to take those calls. So if you find something and you want to know, just shoot us an email and let us know. 800-928-4001. Ken and I and Angie will take a break. We'll get right back into the show.
Hi, Joni Michaels here. We know you care about your money, but are you tired of worrying about it? The Financial Enhancement Group takes care of people just like you who don't want to worry about their money. As fiduciaries, the team at the Financial Enhancement Group will care for your nest egg just like they would care for their own. If they were in your situation, there are many decisions you'll need to make as you face retirement, and the team at the Financial Enhancement Group is here to help you. Call 800-928-4001 or go to yourlifeafterwork.com to set up a time to meet. The confusion and complexity of retirement is almost as daunting as is the excitement of retirement. Don't let your fear and frustration of taxes and investing derail your retirement. Call the Financial Enhancement Group at 800-928-4001. They'll give you a complimentary second opinion on your strategy for retirement. Begin your adventure in your life after work. Call 800-928-4001 or yourlifeafterwork.com. Now back to Consider This program with Joe Clark.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
Happy to have you along. Hey, Angie is helping us with the show because she's the one that's able to see some of the questions that you folks ask before you get in to see me. And so she asked me about two of these defined words, Angie.
Defined benefit and defined contribution.
And I wrote up a third one for you to consider because nobody ever talks about it.
Defined distribution.
And it's because that's our space. That's what we own. So when you hear a word defined benefit, Ken, being that you have one of those, what does that mean to you?
Good question.
That's your pension from the NFL.
Correct.
That's a defined benefit. And I don't know.
What makes it a defined benefit?
Because they're not giving you $1 million. They're going to give you income for life when you reach a certain age.
Gotcha.
Okay. So that's where the defined benefit is.
So would that be called a defined distribution when you take it?
Well, no, because nobody uses the word defined distribution but me. and it's because people don't think about it that way, right? It was never structured this way. When you're eligible, I think it's at age 65.
65, correct. Okay, actually 55, but if you wait till 65.
If you want to take it early, 65, you get more.
Yes.
Right. So you're waiting until 65 to get your check.
Mm-hmm.
Are you even going to remotely, possibly consider sending it back?
No.
No. And it's because it's a defined benefit. You're going to get a dollar form in the mail, and you and your wife are going to cash it, go to Morton's, and have a great old time. Okay? Defined contribution, back in the early 80s, we started switching defined benefit plans into defined contribution. See, as a defined benefit plan, the NFL, and don't feel too bad for them, they have plenty of money, but the NFL is on the hook to send Ken a check every month for as long as he shall live, once he reaches that age. That's their commitment. It is a defined benefit. Here's the amount of money that you get. On a defined contribution, I don't know how long Ken's going to live, Angie,
mm-hmm.
right? I don't know what rates of returns are going to be. I don't know. There's a lot of assumptions. I call it the bad news bears cluster, right? You know, if you think about the coach writing the thing on the whiteboard that we all grew up with, right? There's a lot of things that they don't know. And so in the early 80s, they started switching these defined benefit plans to defined contribution plans, okay? Whereas the employer, I'm no longer liable, Ken, for writing you a check every month. I am now liable for depositing a certain amount of money into your account every month or quarter, and then it's on you to make sure that you have enough at the end of the day. It's on you to make the investment decisions.
Okay.
So we took the, when you look at a defined benefit, a pension manager just isn't somebody who walks off the street. They typically have a degree in econ or finance. They're chartered financial analysts like Adam is here at the Financial Enhancement Group. They're professional experts in managing money, and there's a few actuaries, and there's a team of people that are in the backstage that you don't see that are running this. Now, that doesn't mean there's not volatility to it, right? Mm-hmm. We have numerous families here at the Financial Enhancement Group who get a check from the PGBC. That's the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. And when a pension goes belly up, when they can't make the payments anymore, the PGBC takes over, and that's who your payment comes from. So there is an illusion to a degree that a defined benefit is safer than a defined contribution. In my opinion, it's probably less risky because you've got professionals that actually know what they're doing with managing money, right? So at 65, Ken, you get a check that you're not going to send back. In a defined contribution, you would have a statement that said, hey, I've got $2 million in a 401k, right? And what happens is you will find people who have a very difficult time pulling money out of the account. Once it's reached a certain amount of money, even though you may want the money to go to Morton's or to go on vacation or to do whatever it is you and your wife want to do, you don't want to take the money out of the account. And we see that happen time and time and time again. So eventually, this defined contribution will turn into a defined distribution, Angie.
Yes.
And it happens in one of three ways. It happens because you wait till 70 and a half, and that's how 70% of the accounts in the country are treated. 70% of tax-deferred accounts are not accessed, according to the IRS, until people have to take the money, currently at 70 and a half years old. Or you die,
mm-hmm.
and then your heirs have to take it, right? And then last but not least, you can do it on your own, what I call a designed distribution, right? So you're going to have to take the money. You will exit. Just as God has promised us, we're all going to go. Your retirement dollars will too, right?
Yes.
You will exit. So the question is, do you want to leave that to the hands of the IRS, up to your heirs, or do you want to design it yourself? And that's what we help people do at the Financial Enhancement Group. Now, Angie asked me some questions. She goes, is there more volatility? No, it's not really more volatility. It's just in a defined benefit. It's behind a golden curtain, mm-hmm. right? So you don't see Oz working, right? That's me and Adam and everything else. Now, we can see the individual numbers. And again, if you want the show notes for the show, this was in our Market Carver this week where I talked about it. If you want to get signed up for the Market Carver, Angie, all that you need to do is go to the website, yourlifeafterwork.com, and get signed up for it. You ask me, Angie, if it was safer. What did you mean by safer?
I guess I meant with a defined benefit. To me, that just seems kind of promissory because, like you said, maybe that company won't be around. You know, I look at, you know, here with us in General Motors. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, is it safer with money that your employer deposits or gives you for a benefit and they may or may not be there later? Or is it safer for a contribution where you're putting your own money in and you're not going to go bankrupt? Or,
well, you don't know that. I've watched a lot of people go bankrupt in their 401k, right? They've taken loans out to buy things that they shouldn't have bought. They've made investment decisions they shouldn't have made. I don't think you can necessarily reach that conclusion at all. What I will tell you is at the time of this recording, when you look at private pensions, so those are corporate pensions, they're funded to about the 84% level. So about 84% of what they need to fulfill what they believe that they're going to have over time. Mm-hmm. When you look at the state pensions, they're down to 50%, state and local.
Okay.
And the federal government just passed them just a little bit above 50%. So the federal government was way behind. They've done a really, really good job catching up, getting theirs done. But a big part of that is in the federal world, they had a program called the CSRS, or Civil Service. Mm-hmm. They switched to FERS, back in the mid-90s, somewhere in there. And the FERS is a defined contribution plan, right? So as their people are aging out, naturally their pension system is looking a little bit a little bit better.
Let me ask you this question, Joe. When a pension goes bad, Pension Guarantee Corp pays it, correct?
Pays part of it.
So who pays into that?
There's a max you can get.
So who pays into that?
Well, the pensions actually do. So the lower their funding.
Almost like insurance?
Like an insurance policy. The lower their funding, when they do the math and the numbers, the more money they actually have to contribute, right? So, you know, this I hadn't had this planned for the next conversation we were going to have, but it's so important, I think, for people to understand how pensions work. I will walk you through this because we really have everybody on the wrong side of the trade here. When you're looking at pensions, it's not set up necessarily in people's best interest, if you will, to make sure that funding truly shows up. And you and I, Ken, talked about CalPERS, but we'll bring that up again. CalPERS is the largest pension fund in the country. That's the state employees for the state of California. Hey, you're listening to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark, along with Ken Dilger, Angie Kinzer. We'll take a break and be right back. 800-928-4001. Well, good morning and welcome back to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
And I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
And Angie poked the bear.
Yes.
You know,
I'm good at that.
You wake up. Yes, you are. Yes, you know, hey, Joe, I need you here. Joe, I need you there. Yes. Yes, dear. However, so we were talking about pensions, and the best way to think about a pension is an annuity payment. So when you think defined benefit, and in fact, in the old days, before they called them defined benefit plans, they called them their annuity. You know, I'd see these 75 and 80-year-old people back when I first started in 1987, and they would call it their annuity, right, as opposed to a pension. And an annuity has to come typically from a life insurance company, right? Pensions don't have to be life insurance companies, but many times they are turned over to life insurance companies. Okay.
Okay.
So here's the problem. Ken and I are going to run a company. Okay, Angie?
Okay.
Here's the deal. Pension money has to be separate from corporate assets. Okay. So every now and then you'll hear somebody say something, Ken, like they have a rabbi trust or something mm-hmm. like that. Those are some sophisticated tax deferral mechanisms, where it can be a part of the general fund, because sometimes those are part of the creditor. They're not protected from creditors if the company should go under. With a pension, that money's separate. So when you talk about the AT&T pension and AT&T as a company, those are two separate things,
okay,
right? The only reason I used AT&T as this example, just so you know, is I spent 18 months working there. It's how I met Barb. that's the only reason it came out of my mouth, right? So you've got an AT&T pension fund, and you've got an AT&T company, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The pension fund has its own board, right? It's got its own group of people. And the pension fund has to go to the board of directors for AT&T and says, based on our numbers, based on the age of your workforce, you know, in order for you to fulfill your benefits, this is the amount of money that we need.
Okay.
Based on this assumed, come in the bad news bears again, rate of return. Right?
Yes.
So you can see how this works. The lower the pension board says their rate of return is, Ken, the more money you, as the chairman of AT&T, has to pony up.
Interesting.
Right? So your bias, right? I want to keep my job as the pension manager. So my bias is to say that we're going to get a higher rate of return. And your bias as the CEO is to say we're going to get a higher rate of return. Right?
Yes.
And everybody in the room is there but for the pensioner. Right? So, I mean, there are rules. That's where that PGBC, the premium goes up if you're less underfunded. But if you remember, and I'm going to blow the numbers, but CalPERS was not, as I recall, and we did this mid last year, but they were off about 2% in their anticipated returns from what they actually received over, like, the last 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Right? Oh, yeah. Oh, it gets worse. So... They cut their estimate by 25 basis points. Now, that means a quarter of a percent if you're not used to hearing basis points. They cut their estimate by a quarter of a percent. And the state of California had to pony up an extra $500 million just because they cut it by a quarter, right? Now, do you suppose the governor's mansion was happy about having to cough up another $500 million?
No.
No.
Wow.
Right? So we now still have them having an estimate that is much higher than reality, right? Meaning they're working themselves into holes deeper and deeper and deeper. And that's what you're seeing with the state and local governments. Go ahead, Angie. I see the hamster turning.
Keep going.
All right. Okay. Well, that really, I mean, that, I just want you to understand that that's how the game works, right? It is a series of assumptions. Life expectancy of the pensioners, right?
Mm-hmm.
The average rate of return that you're going to be able to get on the money that's going in, and whether the company truly has the profits to be able to put money into the plans to get them caught up. And that's really where you are. So in the state of Illinois, for instance, I mean, when you look at the country, the largest exodus of people because of the salt tax, right? Illinois is number two.
Okay.
Right? Just because it's, you know, it's in bad shape. And I haven't seen the numbers. I've just heard the numbers. But it's they're losing like two families for every one that is going in. So they have some definite challenges that are there. Now, Angie, you did want to talk about inheritance today.
Yes.
So let's talk. Go ahead and set me up for that. What were you trying to get to?
Well, okay. My question was if there are two of you that are going to receive an inheritance and one of you is in a higher tax bracket than the other.
Okay.
Let's say one makes, you know, much more money. The other one doesn't make as much. You receive from, as an heir, you receive the exact same amount of money because you're in different tax brackets. I wondered if the benefit's actually still the same for both of you.
So this is where we talk about two things, where beneficiaries aren't the same and inheritances aren't the same. So that answer all depends. So if you inherit my car, Angie, right? In the state of Indiana, there's no inheritance tax. And between Barb and I, we can have almost $23 million, if not $23 million, in an estate that's not taxable at the federal level. We're under that, right? So there's no taxes that are owed on the car at all. And you get what's called a step-up in basis because it was a house or a car or a farm or a stock portfolio, okay? So it doesn't matter if your bracket is higher or lower, you would get the same thing as your sister.
Right.
Right? Now, on the other hand, it's an IRA.
That's what I was thinking.
Okay? Now that it's an IRA, remember that money is fully taxable when you go to use it. And so, yes, Angie, if you're in a higher tax bracket, you would actually get less value than your sister would if she were in a lower bracket.
Okay.
The inverse is also true of the Roth IRA, right? The Roth is better for you than the other. So, Ken, one of the things that we do when families come in is we remind them that not all assets are the same and not all beneficiaries are the same. So I try to use three tax returns anytime I can. Your adult age children, if you've got them, and your parents are still living, to be able to shift income around, because we're not usually all in the same tax bracket all at the same time, right? There were many years where I made a gift to my mom when she was still working, and she contributed to a Roth IRA, and I'm the beneficiary.
Okay.
Right? Because we didn't have the what's called the backdoor Roth concept, so that was in the early 2000s. You have to pay attention to the opportunities that are out there. And in all things, remember that there are two tax codes in the United States, Angie. Who are they?
One for the informed and one for the non-informed.
Everybody thinks it's, she's only been here for 7 years. So everybody thinks it's one for the rich and one for the poor. But it's not. It really is one for the informed and one for the uninformed. And I will remind you again, to know and not do, you might as well have not known. I mean, that just gives you a headache. I knew I should have done this differently.
Yeah.
I knew I should have done this differently. But there's the one big thing, caveat I'll give you on this inheritance stuff on the IRAs, is to make certain you do nothing but call me if you inherit an IRA. Because once it's an inherited, unless you're a spouse, there is no going backwards. And I would even say even if you are a spouse. Many people do not understand the rules. We've watched some bloodshed in the streets where people have taken money out of IRAs, realized it was fully taxable, thought they had a 60-day rollover provision. You don't ever, as an inherited beneficiary, inherited IRA, you touch it, you got it, and you're getting taxed on it, and there is no way around it. Hey, you're listening to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark, along with Ken Dulger, Angie Kinzer. You got a question or comment, you can shoot me an email, 800-928-4001. While you're at the website, do not forget to get signed up for the Market Carver. It is a free video that we send out every week. 800-928-4001. We'll be right back. Well, good morning and welcome back to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
I'm Ken Dulger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
Happy to have you along. So the best way, Angie, to think about the tax code is to think about what item in your household? Stair steps. You've watched me do this 100 times. The best way to think about taxes is to think about a series of stair steps.
Yes.
Right? And what happens with those critters, because we're going to go back to IRAs because I want to make sure everybody's clear on this thing. What happens in this series of stair steps is they go upwards. So you're going higher from left to right. And the first thing that you have when you, even with the new 2018 tax code, the first thing that you may have is what we would call wages. Or earned income. And Ken, this one's going to become a big one for you this year because many people are going to try to shift stuff from earned income to QBID income or Section 199A because the tax break is big enough.
Gotcha.
So any business owners that you have that are trying to trying not to pay as much,
of course.
You're gonna see a shift in income on how some of that stuff looks. But your first income are wages, and that's where FICA and FUTA come out. And what's important when we talk about IRAs, so this is especially true for people who are inheriting IRAs, and it's especially true for your parents, right, who don't have a lot of income, right? So I'm 52. You know, my generation is starting to show up with big defined contribution plans.
Okay.
You know, we see many plans that are way over $1 million that are coming in today from people that are retiring because they've had since 1980 to put money in, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times I see people who are in their 80s and 90s and they may only have 50,000 or seven, you know, it's not a big deal. It was something that was added to their pension.
Yes.
So it was not a huge financial thing. So when you look at these wages, this is one of our largest political battles that we have in the United States of America, okay? Because you will hear people say that half the people don't pay taxes. That is both accurate and inaccurate, okay? And it depends how you look at taxes. So wages are those withholding things that come out of your paycheck. And that's where you pay into FICA, Social Security, and unemployment taxation that's there. And then your employer puts in the other half for you, the other 7.65%, right? So you may have people that are out there that don't make a lot of money, and because of earned income credits or other things like that, you may say that they don't pay taxes because, Angie, they never get to the stair steps.
Right.
Right? But you tell some of them that they didn't pay taxes and they have all of that withholding that's taken out, they very much felt like they pay taxes. And most of that money that's returned around April, right, comes from this withholding that was not out of FICA and FUTA, but it was money that was withheld off these stair steps, and they never got to the stair steps, right? They never got to that. So when you look at this, for a married filing joint person, you can make about $104,000 in Indiana, take off your $24,000 itemized deductions, or standard deductions now, rather.
Right.
The first $19,000 that you make are going to be taxed at 10%, so that's a stair step, okay? And then you're going to go up to the 12% bracket. You're going to take a 20% jump, not a 72, a 12% bracket, up to almost $79,000, okay? And that's how it looked for 2018. Now, Ken, have you ever met anybody who wanted to pay taxes?
No.
No, I haven't either. And in fact, I mean, we've talked about this before in the gym and everything else. There's never been one time where I was excited to go to the gym, right? There's a lot when I'm excited when it's over, and I'm excited about how I look or feel later, but I'm not excited about going.
No.
Right? And you're not excited about paying taxes. But what happens is we have people, so think about your stair steps here. We have people who no longer have wages. They've retired.
Okay.
Right? They're 65 years old. And they're already taking Social Security, whether they should be or not, is immaterial, right? Doesn't take a lot of money to live in central Indiana, okay? The way Social Security, Ken, is taxed is the higher all of your income is, the higher percentage you pay on taxes on your Social Security. The maximum is 85% taxable, okay? We have people, when they come to see us, who literally have million-dollar accounts in an IRA, and are living on two Social Security checks.
Yes.
Okay? Happens all the time. So go back to my stair steps. Remember I told you you could take out about $104,000 a year and be in the 12% bracket, right? And you've got two people living on Social Security who may be living on, let's just call it $55,000 worth of tax, or $55,000 worth of income, less the $24,000 standard deduction, right? And if they're 65, it's not 24, it's now 26,600. They get an extra 1,300 apiece for being over 65. So their taxable income, Ken, is very, 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 very low. And what we want to help them do is learn to bracket bump. Even though they may not need the money out of the IRA, we want them to take as much money out of the IRA as they can up to the top of that 12% bracket to bracket bump. You've got to understand, whether it's you at 48, me at 52, Angie, we won't talk about, though we graduated the same year, but we'll leave that out.
We'll leave that out.
Regardless of where we are, we're on a financial journey. And for me not to do planning that impacts 2019 is a mistake. For me not to do planning that doesn't impact 2029 is a mistake. We've got to look at this as a financial journey. So I have to look at two scenarios. I die too soon. I live too long, right? And then I've got to deal with the probability that is probably somewhere between the two, right? And so we've got to look at this financial journey. And like I told you in the first conversation we had today, people had to find benefits. That's the pension plan or the annuity that people have. Now most people have defined contribution plans if they have anything at all. That's a 401k, and you can even think about it being an IRA. And what you have to understand is you are going to exit. Your retirement dollars are going to leave, right? And so you can either let the IRS force your hand at 70 and a half. You can die and let your heirs have to deal with it because they do have to take required minimum distributions too. Or you can design your own distribution, and you do that by recognizing you're on a financial journey. Do I want to pay taxes on money that I don't need right now at 12%? No, nobody wants to pay taxes, right? Nobody wants to pay taxes. But if I thought my journey was going to be taxed at a higher rate than 12% in the future, right? And we know in 2025, Ken, it sets, with the tax code sunsets, so it goes back to 15% unless they vote to keep it in, right? We already know that it's going back up. If I know that and I can control where my taxation is, why wouldn't I want to go to the gym today, or what I say when I speak publicly, eat broccoli today? Right? You can have a little chocolate cake. That's tax deferral. Feels good right now, right? you know, broccoli doesn't always feel so good right now. Now we're getting better at eating it. But
I think you pick on broccoli too much. Well, broccoli's really good. Let's say spinach.
Okay.
So
the picture of spinach is not so cool, right? Broccoli's, that's true. That's part of the deal. But you get the point. It's, we've got to look at our tax return, even though it's a one-hit wonder. It's for 2019. We just finished 2018's. Even though it's a one-hit wonder, we've got to look at it like this is our financial journey going forward. And Ken, making sure that your financial future is lined up when you know when that pension check's going to start to come, right? What do we do between now and then to maximize your situation? Hey, you're listening to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark, along with Ken Dilger, Angie Kinzer. We're having a great day. I hope you are too. Give us a call, 800-928-4001. Angie would be more than happy to take your call. We'll take a break and be right back. Well, good morning and welcome back to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
And I'm Ken Dilger.
And I'm Angie Kinzer.
Angie, where would you like to start?
On recap of all
this? This is our recap. Okay. And you're in charge.
Well, as you were going through that, I thought, you know, I actually had a great question that I didn't take advantage of when you were back at the defined benefit, because most of the questions that are on that board I've heard before, because generally people will call me. I'm the first point of contact. And as I'm taking some information down to schedule an appointment for them, I hear all these questions. And so I, in turn, ask the questions to you. You try to explain them to me. And one gentleman did call in from a company in Indianapolis and said, I think I can take my pension now. He said, I'm 58 years old, and I think I can take it. He goes, I've been told I could take it. And he goes, well, maybe I can't take it. So he had no idea whether he was eligible to take that out early, or whether it was a defined benefit, a contribution. He didn't know what he had for sure. And he had been there long enough that he said, I need to get into somebody and figure out what I exactly have. And he goes, and that's embarrassing to even say.
And it becomes very, very confusing. So if we go back to that first conversation we had on the defined benefit, and many times because the companies want out of the defined benefits, hence the reason for ending it, right? It's very, they've got to do numbers on your life every year, Ken, and it becomes expensive to maintain and to automate. And so what you may get is a sheet of paper that says, your pension is $6,000 a month, or we'll give you $780,000 today, right? That you can roll into an IRA, right? And so now it becomes very confusing in terms of which you should take. And the numbers, even though they all have to be approved by the Department of Labor, the numbers can be very wacky. We had two people leave two different hospitals, relatively same income, relatively same years of service, relatively same age. I mean, these should have been very, very, very close. And one lady was going to get $700 more a month than the other one was.
Wow.
And
that's
so
huge.
The one that was getting the $700 a month, we said, no, we keep the defined benefit, take that monthly check. And the one that was getting less, we said, no, it makes sense to take the lump sum. You don't need the income now anyhow. And we were able to do some other stuff. But that's really where we talk about that silo investing, Angie.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that he could have been talking about that you may hear at work, where we do a lot of stuff, is with what's called in-service non-hardship distribution.
Yes.
So in-service means while you're still working. Non-hardship means nothing's wrong. You just want money out of the 401k, out of the defined benefit, and to roll it into an IRA so that you have more investment choices. Or maybe you're doing some Roth conversion strategies and you want to do them outside of the 401k.
Now, is that limited? Do most plans offer that, or is it just depend on where you work?
The majority of plans offer the in-service non-hardship distribution. The question is at what age.
Okay.
So most 403Bs that were teachers, hospitals, most of them do not offer it. Most 401Ks do, but many times you have to be over 60. There's some down in Indianapolis where you have to be over 50. But you can, the plan can be adjusted to allow for that. But good question.
Okay.
What's next?
I feel like Ken should have a question next.
Oh, you're deferring to me, huh?
Wow. Anything, Ken?
You know, nothing really pops out of me since it's all kind of all general terms and new to me. But, you know, I'm curious now that the tax day was Monday.
Yes.
To see these new tax returns come out. I haven't seen one yet.
They're ugly.
Yeah, I'm sure the difference between what I've seen the last you know, multiple of years doing mortgages to what I'm going to see
right.
come in the future.
Your eyes know where to go to look, and it's not there.
Right.
So I'm sure over time it's going to be considered to be more simple. It's just not more comfortable yet, right?
Correct.
I remember when I saw the first one, I could hardly figure out what the taxable income was. you know, because you had to sit down and read it, and I'm used to just glancing and being able to get it. The biggest thing that you've got to pay attention to, and you know, I love my wife dearly, and you know, it's tax time is always stressful for me. You know, it's just it's stressful because of all the families that we take care of. It's stressful because of all my CPA partners, and it's stressful because I really don't like the system. So she's got her shopping list of stuff that she's used to getting together, her checklist.
Right.
Right. So I show up at the CPA's office, and there's our license plates. I go, honey, we don't need these anymore.
Well, she's not a tax code junkie like you are.
No, but that's my point. You know, a lot of the things that you used to have to take to your CPA, you're not going to have to take to your CPA any longer. And depending on what your taxable income is, the state tax, it limited, is $10,000. So if what you pay to the state of Indiana or whatever state you're listening to in the show, and your property taxes and your excise, if all of that's over $10,000, you don't need all of that stuff anymore.
And right? On your federal return, if everything that you were able to itemize before is not greater than your standard deduction, then you wouldn't need to itemize.
And that's always been true. But now that jump is huge.
Yes.
So when we sit down with people to talk about standard deductions, your big three deductions were state taxes, which are now capped at $10,000, mortgage interest, and your charitable gifting. And remember, there is no more miscellaneous deductions at all.
Which is what charitable gifting is under?
No. Charitable gifting is its own.
Okay.
Miscellaneous is when you got paid mileage to drive for work, or when you had to buy union dues were deductible. Fees that they paid to us were deductible. Fees they paid to CPAs could be deductible if it wasn't IRA money. So all of that's gone. And so it's really changed how your tax return works. And so this is an ideal time, now that you've got your return, is to sit down, look at it, and figure out what your strategy is for next year. And don't wait until December where it's too late to do anything and the holidays are here. And, you know, well, it's Christmas, Joe. I don't want to think about tax. Well, no, I don't either, Ken. However, when the clock strikes midnight, December 31st, this one's in the books.
And so, Joe, I got a question for you.
So
if somebody paid in more than usual this year, somebody's a straight W-2 employee, how would you go about changing their deductions on their, is it W-9?
On the withholdings, yeah.
Withholdings. How would you go about figuring that out, whether do you take out more?
So I have not.
On a weekly paycheck, or would you say, hey, let's put this aside knowing that we're going to pay in next?
We definitely don't want to give the IRS loans for free.
Correct.
Right? So anytime you can add to that money, and it helps you too with what you do because it reduces their debt to income ratio.
Correct.
Because it shows up as more income. So
we go off the gross income,
okay. Fair enough. I would always have them withhold the money and not pay the IRS more than they knew they were going to have to pay. And for the first time that I know of, the IRS or Congress, somebody put together a site so you can go in and tell your employer what your exemptions ought to be based on what your real income is, so that so extra money wouldn't have been withheld.
Gotcha.
They've never done that before. I hope the site is working. I guess we'll see as the year plays out a little bit. Hey, you're listening to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark, along with Ken Dilger. Ken, we appreciate you being here. And Angie Kinzer, our event coordinator, she is the first person to talk to you when you call, 800-928-4001. If you want to do this on your own, that's your business. If you're looking for a fiduciary, that's our business. Have an outstanding Easter, my friends. We will see you again next week.